So I am excited to be here with you. I am Dr. Peter. It is good to meet those of you that are here. And this meeting tonight is all about one thing. It's all about helping with the discernment about joining the Resilient Catholics community. That's really kind of what we're focusing on. And so I thought what I would do is just give a brief presentation with some highlights about the Resilient Catholics community, or the RCC, as we call it, and then really open it up for questions and discussion. And so if you have questions as we go along, you're welcome to fire off a little thing in the chat box. I do pay attention to that. Or you can also just raise your hand, or apparently there's a way you can do it on Zoom too. I've seen people do that on Zoom, where you can raise a hand on Zoom. So does that sound good? Any questions about any of that? All right. I want to start with a very high-level view of what the Resilient Catholics community is all about. The Resilient Catholics community is all about you entering in to your destiny as a beloved son or daughter of God. Really, what we are working toward is the removal of psychological and human formation impediments to you being able to enter into a deep, intimate, and personal relationship with the three persons of the Trinity and with Our Lady, our spiritual mother. And so our little part of the vineyard where we're working is really in this human formation. It's really in the human formation. And so the people that come to the RCC, they know that they are wounded. They know that they need human formation help. They're willing to make sacrifices to bring that about. And we'll talk a little bit more about like the sort of who's a good fit for the RCC, because that's important. But really, what the RCC exists for is to help people to find that deeper peace, deeper security, deeper connection with God, a deeper sense of integration inside, all the parts coming together in a way so that we can love with our whole heart. And that was the great commandment, right? To love the Lord your God with your whole heart. And interestingly, whenever you see that in the three synoptic gospels, you see it leading with the whole heart first and then your whole soul, right? Not leading with the whole soul, but leading with the whole heart first. When I think about that, I think about loving the Lord our God with every fiber of our being. And that includes all of our parts, no part left behind. And so we use some insights from internal family systems to help with that. So, those folks that come into the RCC usually have had quite a bit of exposure to my podcast, Interior Integration for Catholics. Especially episodes like 71 to 74, where I lay out much more about what internal family systems is and how that can be harmonized with what we know to be true by divine revelation. And so what do I hope that RCC members will be able to do in a year, right? It's a year-long program. What am I hoping that folks will be able to do or to have or to be in a year? Well, I really want you to be in a much better relationship with yourself. I really do believe that coming to know yourself, understand yourself, coming to a place where your parts can be seen, heard, known, and understood, can feel safe with you, and that you can love yourself in an ordered way. St. Thomas Aquinas makes the argument that, that we need to love ourselves first. Our Lord said, love your neighbor as yourself. And it makes sense, right? If we don't have a good relationship with ourselves, if we don't value ourselves, if we treat ourselves as shameful or disgusting, if we condemn ourselves, we're not going to be able to make a gift of ourselves to God or to anybody else. So this isn't some sort of narcissistic navel-gazing exercise. This isn't some sort of psychological day spa where we're just pampering ourselves. We're preparing ourselves to be able to make a gift of ourselves. You cannot die to self unless you're self-possessed, unless you actually have a sense of order and well-being within. And so what I want for you is to be able to love yourselves in an ordered way so that you can live out your mission to love God and to love others. And so to recognize that certain parts of ourselves have been left behind, parts of us have been exiled, parts of us carry burdens, to be able to connect with that is really important. We're going to learn a lot about some IFS concepts, again, conformed to a Catholic understanding of the human person. We're going to bring these parts into the spiritual life as well, especially as we get into the second half of the year. We start to be able to connect these parts more with our spiritual lives. And we're going to be learning from each other. One of the things that's really important is that you don't have to do this alone. The RCC brings together like-minded people from all over the world. We have people, you know, from different continents that are involved in the RCC about how do we stay recollected in a natural level, how do we recover when we get unrecollected or dysregulated? How do we stay grounded and in a good place when those around us are getting upset or getting disconnected from a sense of peace and security? We're going to talk about how to be vulnerable in relationships, you know, how to recognize not only your own parts and be in a relationship, but how do you recognize the parts of other people? Because it makes it so much easier, I think, to love our neighbor when we can understand that our neighbors have parts. And sometimes those parts seem very large, they seem very in charge, but it's not the whole of our neighbor when a part is taken over and blended with them. So there's a function of us being able to support each other in the RCC on this pilgrimage to greater human formation, right? So there's this way that we're going to shore up the natural foundation for the spiritual life, checking with your parts before you pray. We're going to be working on getting an established human formation plan of life that supports your spiritual formation and your spiritual life. And so that means checking in with our parts. That means, you know, knowing ourselves. That's one of Socrates, probably his most famous quote, you know thyself, to be able to, and then to be engaging with each other, checking in with your companion. We could talk a little bit about that. And then getting to know the people in your company, you know, so that again, you're not on this journey alone. We have other ways that we get together. We are planning our first annual retreat this August, from August 12th to the 14th, down in Bloomington, Indiana. Those that are joining the RCC in this June cohort are welcome to that retreat. That's we're finalizing some details about that now. It looks like it's going to happen. Like, we've got enough of our current members to come to that. And so, who are we really looking for? Who is the RCC designed for? And it's not everybody, right? So we're looking for a Catholic. We're looking for Catholics and Orthodox Catholics who believe what the church teaches, and a Catholic that understands that they need to work on their human formation, right? These members may be in therapy already. They may have done significant therapy work already. At a minimum, they're psychologically minded, and they're invested in their own human formation. They're willing to grow. They're motivated to grow. And they're willing to put some work into it in their own lives. And so usually people that come into the RCC, like I said, have really resonated with the Interior Integration for Catholics podcast, especially the experiential exercises. They really embrace this idea of multiplicity within the human person, you know, that we do have parts, but that we're also a unity. The folks coming in have to have sufficient social skills to be able to interact appropriately in the online community. We can't take people that are in acute crisis, you know, where the world is crumbling around them and things like that. Folks coming in have to be able to use technology, like being able to do Zoom meetings and so forth effectively. And folks that value the human formation enough to commit the time and energy to work on it. And it's usually about 2.5 hours per week, 2.5 to 3 hours per week at the beginning. And it gets a little more involved as you get about halfway through and we begin to work with exiles. Then we're starting to talk more about like 3.5 hours a week, something like maybe half an hour a day on average. A lot of that is the 75-minute company meetings. And we can talk a little bit more about those as well as some of the other obligations for it. One of the things I do recommend that when people are considering the RCC, that is, if you're on the fence, if you're thinking, yeah, maybe I want to do it, maybe I don't, then we recommend that you don't do it. Or if there is sort of concerns about how much time is it going to take? Can I squeeze out, you know, the minimum, what's the minimum amount of time? If you're thinking about it in those terms, it's not going to be a good fit. Or if there's a lot of ambivalence or a lot of internal churn about it, it usually means that there's some parts that are pretty adamantly opposed to joining the RCC, at least at this time. And it's probably better to wait and do some work around that to see if we can get some greater internal alignment about that. So I think I want to stop there and just kind of see kind of from that broad overview, what questions might be coming up before we get into some more of the details of what does it look like actually to do the program that the RCC offers. I'm just curious if there's any questions at this point. Yes, Catherine.
I just had two questions. Who is the moderator in the company meetings that we'll have weekly? And then what is the exiles that you mentioned that in the other part of?
Sure. So there's three roles that parts have: managers, firefighters, and exiles. And so when I talk about exiles, I'm talking about the parts of us or the sides of us, if you will, that have been rejected, that have been banished from conscious awareness, that have been sent away because they carry an intensity that can threaten to overwhelm the system. They've got too much grief, or they've got too much anger, or they've got too much shame, too much fear. So that's what I mean by the exiles. The RCC is really run by your own companies. Each company has a link and an assistant link that help with some of the facilitation of the company meetings, but with in an effort to kind of keep the price point low enough, we're not staffing those with professional, like mental health professionals, otherwise it would be prohibitively expensive. So what we do is I provide 3 talks for those company meetings, and then there's some discussion questions and some facilitation that happens within those company meetings. But it's really more led by the people that are in there. And so again, that's where we do rely on our RCC members to take that initiative and to grow into that. We do have 3 clinicians on staff, myself, and then also Lizzie Engelkamp and Elizabeth Hoffmeister for some consultations, especially for links and assistant links or other people in the community as well. But it is not an individual sort of one-on-one, you know, type of thing in the RCC. We're not trying to do therapy. We're not trying to replicate what you would have in a counseling relationship. We can't do that legally or ethically because, you know, we're not in a position to be licensed in whatever jurisdictions you're in. But human formation is much bigger than what you can get in counseling or in therapy. So what we're trying to do is bring the best of this to you in a way that really invites you to be able to embrace it and to live it out. So the RCC is often an adjunct to somebody else's own therapy work, or we have had a number of folks come in as they were winding down their therapy, but they wanted to continue to do some work in IFS, or sometimes, you know, I've got an IFS therapist, but my therapist isn't Catholic, so people have sought out the RCC. Sometimes I have a Catholic therapist, but the therapist isn't really into IFS or into the parts stuff, So they come that way. So there's a lot of different ways that that happens. Is that helpful, Catherine? Yeah, okay, great. Other questions? Yes, Tim.
Hi. So I, with that explanation there, what's the structure behind the meetings every week?
Yep. So let's go over that. You guys will open with an opening prayer and then a brief check-in. It's usually about 3 or 4 minutes, just each person in the company discussing kind of how things are going. Then I have 3 talks that I give, right, that are recorded and that'll be played during that time. There's an interconnections talk, which is more of the conceptual material for that week. It's based off of the reading because there is a text that we use. It's called the Self-Therapy Workbook by Bonnie Weiss. So that usually parallels what's going on in there. Although I often bring in a lot more material. So sometimes I'm not using that text because there's some things that I want to bring in. The second talk is an experiential exercise, and it's usually somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes long. And that's where you're actually starting to do a part session, working with your own parts. And then the third talk is a closing talk. So there's a very clear outline that is made available to everybody. And so you kind of see what we're going to be covering, what we're going to be going through for each of the 44 modules that we have in the year-long course.
Okay. So those 3 recorded, that's like every week, you have 3 different, you
know, right. Talks. Or- 3 different talks every week. And then there's also bonus materials. I always do at least 1 extra experiential exercise. So one of the real strengths of the RCC is that we have this huge library of additional materials. Some of those I've created, but I also am pulling from the best of what's out there from other clinicians that's available, you know? And so I make that available in a weekly resource sheet that gets posted. And so there's like, you know, if you want to go into this further, here are some other resources. And so what we're doing is really pulling together an archive or a library for folks to be able to, if they're really struggling, for example, with something to do with parts mapping or parts journaling, or they're having trouble with unblending, there's going to be a lot of extra resources there. And then we are working on getting our coaching program together. And I'm hopeful that by the time you guys start, we will have at least 2 coaches available for individual consultation. So we know that there can be times where people want to do that sort of one-on-one, that want to connect. The other thing to remember, and I haven't mentioned this, is that we have weekly office hours where I come in for an hour on 4th Wednesdays from 9:15 to 10:15 Eastern time. You can bring any question you want to me there. And then we also have special events. Right now we have, it's kind of a new thing that we've just started, but it's an Ask Me Anything, and it's a rapid fire sort of question type of thing. And then we have other types of events that we do on a monthly basis as well. So there's a fair amount of activity. The other thing is that you are always welcome to call me during my conversation hours, which are between 4:30 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday Eastern time on my cell phone, which is 317-567-9594. So
you're a brave man to put that number out to me.
You know, sometimes it's pretty busy, and sometimes, you know, there's still some Tuesdays and Thursdays where a whole hour goes by and nobody calls me. So, you know. But again, what we're trying to do is not be a substitute or a replacement for therapy. But there are a lot of people who can do this work and don't need to be in therapy, right? Or sometimes what will happen is people will start and they'll realize, you know what, I think I really could benefit from therapy. So they add that in, you know, and so forth. So what we're trying to do is really facilitate, you know, and empower folks to do as much of this work as they can on their own. I do have some concerns sometimes about, you know, therapies that foster a kind of dependency on the therapist. And one of the things about internal family systems is that in internal family systems therapy, the primary therapist is the client's self. That's the primary therapist. That's the person that's the one that we're really focusing on. as being able to help the rest of you. It's not that the focus is so much on the therapist or the relationship between the therapist and the client. The real focus is on the relationships within the client, really fostering those. So it's a different way of understanding how that works.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions? Yes, Nathan.
Hi. So something about me, I guess I'd call myself like a Catholic revert.
Okay.
And stuff I'm familiar with just because of Catholic school, but I didn't really take it seriously as a kid. And, you know, now I am. And there's parts that I'm, like, I read your emails. I'm not lost or anything. I'm a smart guy. I can pick it up. But there's some things I am completely clueless about, or I grew up in, my immediate family wasn't Christian, mm-hmm. but my extended family is, they're Protestants. And so I did the questionnaire, and there's a lot of questions about Mary, and mm-hmm. my family's suspicious about Catholics and their relationship with Mary and all that. And thus I have a non-existent relationship with her because of just by virtue of growing up, you know? And so I want to establish that. I don't know how. It feels very awkward. And so I don't know, that's kind of my background about me. And so as far as fit, you know, do I need to work on this first before?
No, what we're avoiding, and this is a lot for safety reasons, are people that come in and they identify as Catholics, but they have an axe to grind with no women's ordination. So they'll say, "I believe in everything, you know, but I also believe that women should be priests, or I believe that, you know, that abortion is permissible in certain circumstances, you know, up to 22 weeks or whatever." I mean, what we want to do is we want to create a space where people can be confident that they don't have to enter into arguments where they're defending the faith. All right. So that's really kind of what we're talking about there. So I'm assuming that people are going to be all over the board when it comes to their relationship with Mary, or frankly, with Jesus. There are some folks that have been, you know, pretty traumatized by men and find it extremely difficult and frightening to relate with Jesus, because Jesus was true God and true man. So, you know, so they might have a relationship with the Holy Spirit, but they don't do much with Jesus. And that's fine too, right? What we're working toward here is, you know, that somebody's not, you know, kind of preaching their own gospel or trying to, you know, create waves within the RCC. Yeah, so that wouldn't disqualify anybody at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people really have difficulty with Mary for other reasons, like they have a real toxic relationship with their mother. So the whole idea of mother is just like really hard, and they don't resonate very well with the idea of Mary as mother. You know, that's another reason where people can have a lot of trouble and not much relationship with Mary. So
thank you. Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Anything else that Sarah? Yeah.
Great. So, did I hear you say that the daily time commitment is about 30 minutes a day, and what does that look like?
So that's the average. All right. So when you start out, what we're going to ask is that you're going to spend about 3 to 5 minutes checking in with your own parts, checking in inside in the morning and in the evening. And then we're also going to be asking you to check in daily with your companion. And so that could be a text message or an email or a private message on our app. And so, you know, there could be days where you're spending maybe 15 minutes, 12, 15 minutes on it. But there's one day a week where you're going to have your company meeting, and that's going to be 75 minutes, right? So that gets you above the 30-minute threshold. One day a week, we're going to ask you to have a little longer conversation with your companion that's in real time. So it's either on the phone or it's on Zoom or something like that for about 10 to 20 minutes. by the time you get about 20 weeks in, 21, 22 weeks in, we're going to be asking for some longer sessions where you're working with your parts, because those 3 to 5 minute periods are fine for checking in and just kind of getting a sense for how your parts are doing, but you're not going to be able to do a lot of the healing or growing work in 3 to 5 minutes. You need some periods of time to get into 12, 15 minutes or longer. So the time commitment does tend to go up after the first 3 or 4 months as folks start to get more familiar with their parts and as they get more comfortable in working inside in that way. Is that helpful? Does that get to more of what you're asking?
Yes, thanks. And a second question is, can you tell or share more about the companions, like who that person is and how the selection process is?
So every, and Nathan alluded to this, everybody that comes into the RCC or applies to the RCC goes through what's called the initial measures kit. And that's a group of 13 or 14, I have to count them up, 13 or 14 measures. And what that does, it takes most people about 2 hours roughly to complete. And from that is generated your IMK report, your initial measures kit report. And that's usually about 5 pages. And in the email that went out to all of you, and then also now on our webpage, the landing page, which is soulsandhearts.com/RCC, you can see some downloaded examples. You can download some examples of those. Those are for fictitious people, but that's kind of typical about what an IMK report looks like. And in an IMK report, we'll identify somewhere between 9 and 15 parts that we are hypothesizing may exist in your system based on the roles that we expect parts are playing. And then we'll also spend significant time talking about the interaction among those parts, how those parts align or polarize, how do they tend to operate within your system, what kind of relationships are happening among parts within your system. That's the bulk of the report, although there is also another section on your current functioning, another section on particular goals for you, objectives, and then also a section on your strengths, as well as a section on the potential challenges that we see. And then there's a section on recommendations. So it's pretty involved. And, you know, these reports look very different from one person to another, depending on how that person's system is set up and functioning. What we do as far as assigning companions is that once everybody gets into a company, right, and companies have between, at the bare minimum, like 7, up to about 10 people in them. Once, and they're formed based on 2 factors. One is all men or all women. And the next one is, when can you all meet? So Patty Ellenberger, our office manager, has this process where everybody that's applied to the RCC that is going to be joining us gives us their availability on our scheduling app. And then she brings people into the company. She's trying to find a spot so that everybody can meet on that weekly basis. So it's Tuesdays from 8 o'clock Eastern to 9:15 Eastern PM. That's going to be a company, and there'll be, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 people in there. Once those companies are established, then I take a look at all the IMKs for all the people in that company. And then I match folks up based on what I'm thinking of as, you know, what about compatibility and who might really make a good companion pair. And so once we do that, then those companions are assigned. Occasionally people will come in as a pair and they say, we want to join it. We want to be together. Then we'll look to see if there's, and we can do it at the same time, right? They can be in the same company. Then we'll look and see if there's any contraindications to that, if there's any sort of incompatibilities that we're seeing or anything that seem like would compromise that relationship. And that's, and then if not, then they can stay as a companion pair. You can request a particular person to be a companion. And then the primary responsibility of those companions is really around accountability, helping each other by, you know, touching base every day. And what the primary communication is about is, how are you doing on your personal human formation plan? Did you do your morning check-in? You know, did you do your evening check-in? You know, how's it going with the reading? You know, and sometimes we see that, you know, really deep friendships have grown out of those companion pairs. We have some folks in the first cohort that have, you know, traveled across the country to meet their companions because they've really developed a deep bond. But it is not, that's not necessary. And it's certainly not to be a therapy relationship or anything like that. We're not looking for that person to, you know, somehow be their companion's therapist or anything like that. So that's a long answer, but I'm not sure. Did that cover what you were wondering about, Sarah, with the companions?
Yes, thank you. And just to confirm, did you say their groups are all women or all men?
Right. All okay. Women or all men. Yep. The companies are all women or all men. And your companion pair will be the same sex. We have had a number of married couples come and they said, hey, can we be each other's companions? And the answer is no, you get a new companion. you know, you got to have somebody that, although that's actually been really fruitful for the couples that have done it, you know, to be going through in the same cohort, you know, they're sharing an experience, even if they're not in the same company. So. Yes, Nathan.
Do people repeat the RCC? Like, second question is like, what's life like after, you know, all this is over?
What's life like when it's all over, and do people repeat? So, you know, we haven't had our first cohort finish yet, right? They're about at week 23 right now, week 22, week 23. What my plan is that after we get our first, if you will, graduating class, to do an ongoing, what I'm calling year two. And that gets much more into the spiritual dimensions of this. There is a particular Benedictine monk that I'm really hoping that we can do some work together to help folks with more of the spiritual stuff. I really believe in starting with the natural formation, really working out, you know, that solid human formation, that solid natural foundation, but then getting more into that spiritual aspects of it in year two. And in year two, what that's going to look like in the way that I'm imagining it now is that that'll just kind of continue, right? You'll still be in, you know, a companion pair. You'll still be in a company in year two. And what's going on with that is that that'll be more ongoing, so that but there'll always be new material, new talks and things like that. So you'll be able to continue. That's kind of what we're imagining now at this point. So. Yeah. Was that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So different companies or different cohorts as they work through the year will just fold into that second, what I'm calling sort of year two, which just kind of keeps going on. And we'll revisit certain topics. And then we'll also be bringing in some new topics for folks that already have that first year of human formation. It allows us to be able to work at a significantly deeper level. And I will say that when you start in the RCC in year one, we assume that you don't know much or really anything about internal family systems or about your own parts or anything like that. Going through that process of the IMK is really eye-opening. And it's really been surprising for many of our members to kind of see what that whole process is like. So that's all part of the discernment process. The other thing is that we're usually not, sometimes people are worried, you know, am I going to get accepted? Will I pass the tests? You know, and it doesn't really work like that. Sometimes we have recommendations for folks if we're noticing that there's a lot of distress that's not being regulated real well. We'll say, well, you know, we think you can be a good fit for the RCC, but as part of that, we would want you to get into your own therapy, you know, because we don't want it to be a situation in which a person's going to have to, leave, or is going to be too distressed to take advantage of the things that we have to offer in the RCC. We do ask that people stay for the first 10 sessions when they join, right? Because it's not just about you and your human formation. You're also there as a companion for another person, and you're also there in a company. And so, so if there's sort of a cavalier attitude, like, yeah, I want to give it a whirl, I'll go to two or three sessions, see if it works for me. No, we don't do that. We've had some folks that have kind of wanted to take that kind of approach, but we don't do it that way. You know, we ask that people stay for the 10 sessions. Now that's not a hard and fast thing. If circumstances come up, illness, you know, other types of things, or just doesn't seem like it's working, there's a strong need to be able to get out, we're not going to bind you to that. But also to know that it can take up to 10 sessions for those bonds to really begin to form within the companies and with your companions. So we do ask for that. If you are in a therapy, we want what we do not to work at cross purposes with, you know, a therapy. If it's a good therapy, good therapist, a good fit for you, we want it to complement what you're doing and not work against it. And the same thing if you're in spiritual direction. We don't take the place of spiritual directors either. So Catherine, I think your hand is still up, but I didn't know if you had a question. I want to make sure. No, okay, all right. Sarah, how about you?
Just curious how many are in the first cohort and how many companies do you have?
So the first cohort, we had 61 at the beginning that joined, and we had six companies, four companies of women and two companies of men. In the second cohort, I don't remember the exact numbers. I think it was somewhere around 50, 51, four companies of women and one company of men. So, yep. It seems like we generally get more interest from the women than the men. And one of the things that's been hard, it happened in this last time, is we weren't able to place all of the men into one company. We weren't able to get enough men to form two companies. So there were, I think, three men that wanted to be in the RCC, but they couldn't make the time that the nine other men could in the company that did launch. So they're welcome to join in the next company or the next cohort if they can make that work. So the scheduling is one of those things. There are a few people in each cohort who, you know, would be a great fit for the RCC, but we just couldn't match them to a company where they could do it at that time. So flexibility in that scheduling is really important. We have some folks that also have unpredictable schedules. They're doing shift work, or they're doing work where, you know, they're rotating a shift every week or something like that, and they can't meet at consistent times. Then unfortunately, they're not going to be a good fit for the RCC at the present time. We also know, though, that people's schedules can be hard to predict a year, you know, or 6 months, a year in advance. We have had one case in which one person moved companies because the original time didn't work anymore, but she was able to be placed in another company, and that did work out. So. Is that helpful, Sarah?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Nathan, you got another question for me. I love it. I'm glad that we're having the questions. Is this really what's most helpful? I don't always think of what, you know, might be on people's minds as they consider joining the RCC. So I love the questions because I think it's really helpful, not just to those that ask, but also to the people that may be watching this later. So yeah. Okay.
Could you kind of unpack, I guess, like the confidentiality with the IMK? Like, is it okay if I share it with my therapist, the results of that, or okay.
Confidentiality, you can
the copyright stuff.
You can use the IMK in whatever way you think would be helpful to you, and you can share it with whoever you think would be helpful to share it with. So we have had lots of our RCC members share their IMKs with their therapist or with their spiritual director. Sometimes they've shared it with their spouses. You know, they said, you know, they feel like this would be a good thing. You know, you don't want to share it with somebody that you're concerned might weaponize it, right? You know, or something like that. But yeah, definitely to be able to share it with folks that you think are helpful. Yeah. So you're not bound by any confidentiality with that. You can share that with whomever you think would be helpful. Does that get to the core of that, Nathan, for you?
Yeah, I just remember the agreement I had to sign. There's certain things I couldn't share.
What you can't do is share the actual instruments, because some of those are protected by copyright law, and some of those are protected. And so, what we don't want you to do is share, you know, what's on the Google form or what's on the part one, which is some of the instruments that are protected by, you know, copyright and trademark law, because I have agreements with those test providers to not, you know, sell them or distribute them. So that's what that means. But your report is entirely different from that. So
okay, got it.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
You bet. Tim, you've got a question.
Yes, I do. So you've mentioned several occasions, like even the number 7 is the minimum, you know, and then 9, and those are odd numbers. So how do you match
that? We have some companion trios. And so when we have an odd number like that, we have 3 together. And so what's happening in that relationship is that one, you know, that when you send out the private message, you send it to both of your companions, and they're both checking in with you. And then when those folks get together, usually what they try to do is have a longer conversation, the 3 of them, you know, once a week. So there's a little more work that goes into that. Those have actually worked pretty well too. You know, the friendships have kind of developed in those trios as well.
So they don't have any third wheel parts that get hurt.
Usually, you know, we've not had anything come up around that. We have not had anything come up around that. We have had some folks that have discerned out of the RCC, and we've done some reassigning, you know, because if somebody leaves the RCC, well, then their companion is going to need to be paired up with somebody else. And so we've had some trios form that way. And some of those have been really rich additions to the companion pairs that they've joined. And we are sensitive to these things. If it doesn't seem to be working out, let us know, you know? I mean, and we've had to do some rearranging. We've had some folks with real health concerns who haven't been able to check in or really work the program. So there's been some ways that we've had to do some adjusting. And we really do try to do that in a thoughtful, reflective, prayerful, and discerning way. So,
us men, we're kind of, I guess, we're just too busy, or we think we're too good for something like this.
I don't know the exact reasons. I can compare it to when I went on my IFS trainings and did level 1, level 2, level 3 training, and also marriage training in IFS, the ratio was about 6 to 1 women to men. So what we're seeing in the RCC is a more equal ratio than that. You know, more like 3 to 1. But I also think that culturally it might be easier for women to imagine talking about their inner lives with other women than it is for men to imagine talking about their inner lives with other men. So, you know, I think there's some cultural factors that impact that. I do connect with the men's companies a little more. And then Elizabeth and Lizzie will be checking in with the women's companies. And the men's companies have been doing, the men in those companies that have stayed with the program have been doing some really good work. So.
Then I just wanted to say, I do have to leave it in 10 minutes. So just in case I have to leave. Then.
Yeah, and we'll be wrapping it up at the top of the hour. So I don't want to keep people beyond the time boundaries that we agreed to. So. No word about finances on this. We haven't talked about that. It's $249 to apply and that gets you the entire IMK and the 15-minute feedback session with me, where we can talk about anything that is in your IMK or any other questions you have about the RCC, because that's still part of the discernment. And then it's $99 a month. And so that would go for the 12 months. And so it's a little over $1,400. I think it's $1,437 over the course of the year. Now, that said, we never turn away people because of financial need. When Dr. Jerry and I founded Souls and Hearts, we agreed that as part of our mission of social justice, that if somebody is a good fit for one of our programs, and that would include the Resilient Catholics community, that we will work with them to make that happen. So, so we ask you to be thoughtful and discerning about that as well. Tim. Oh, do you still have your hand up? I don't know if you had another question. Okay, you're muted, so I couldn't quite hear it, but I saw the head shake. So, all right. So that's part of that. Yes, Diane.
So I've been reading. You know, I sort of found you. I started reading about IFS before I found you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was bumping up against in the IFS was sort of this benevolent self who does no wrong and is all good. And mm-hmm. so this conflict between the understanding of the person
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like in the non-Catholic approach, the self does not need a savior or a redeemer.
That's right.
They're almost mini gods.
Right.
And so how do you package it, or how do you like correct that?
Yes. This is great. We actually within Souls and Hearts have two efforts going on right now that are going to be book length efforts to really ground IFS and modify it to conform it to a Catholic understanding of the human person. There is a doctoral student in clinical psychology at Divine Mercy University. His name is Christian Amalu. I am serving on his dissertation committee, and his dissertation committee is all about how do you understand IFS through the lens of the Catholic Christian metamodel of the person. That's Divine Mercy University's 800-page volume that really is all about how do you do therapy, or how do you understand, you know, mental health from the wisdom of the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And then the co-founder of Souls and Hearts, Dr. Jerry Crete, is working on a book right now that is all about, you know, understanding IFS and the number of problems that come up in terms of understanding what that means. You have to understand that IFS started out as a therapy, and then it became a kind of spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could see it in the writings, you know, reading.
Yeah. And
it's like,
and one of the main problems is what the one that you raised, right? Schwartz recognizes that the parts are in need of redemption, but who is the redeemer? Well, for Schwartz, it's the client's self, right?
Oh, yeah.
Self. Well, obviously that doesn't square with a Catholic anthropology. And so episode 73 of the podcast is internal family systems really Catholic? And I get into some of the issues with IFS there. So that's a resource for you as well.
Okay, good.
In the interior therapist community, which is our sister community, which is made up of therapists in training that are Catholic, I go through Richard Schwartz's book, Internal Family Systems Therapy, second edition. And for each of the chapters, I do a Catholic take on that chapter. So this is something that we are dealing with all the time.
I could imagine.
Yeah. So any approach to therapy or any approach to human formation that came from a secular or non-Catholic anthropology, you're going to have to adjust, right? But what we want to do is be Catholic with a little c, you know, that little c Catholic, I guess it's this way. I don't know, this way. Okay, no. Yeah. But what that means is universal, right? We want to draw from the good. So if you're a psychodynamic, if you're taking a psychodynamic approach, we don't discard the notion of the unconscious because Freud was critical of religion. You know, we want to be sure that we are taking all of that good, but that we are harmonizing the approach to be consistent with the Catholic faith rather than the other way around. Right. We don't want to be harmonizing the faith to fit the approach, right? So that's how we take a look at internal family systems. There's a number of issues there. And some of it has gotten less conformable with Catholicism in really recent years. In really recent years, you know, Richard Schwartz has started to say things like every part has a body. And that's just not ontologically true. You know, there's one body, you know, that the parts share. And I think what he's getting at is that parts have different experiences of the body, they have different ways of understanding the body, but that's not a different body. So we are adamant about being able to be corrected about this, you know, and I put this out in the podcast and I am consulting with different folks that have stronger backgrounds in philosophy and theology than I have to see if there's anything that's inconsistent with the Catholic faith. You know, at the same time, we are doing some really cutting edge work here. We're really doing some pioneering work here. And so if there is something that comes up that seems problematic, I want to hear about it, you know?
So when we get into this and you talk about the self, it's going to be different than the way Schwartz talks about the self
in the sense of, yeah, certainly we're going to be looking at the self in a more nuanced way, a different way than Schwartz does. For example, Schwartz believes that the human person is made up of the self, the parts, and the body. That's the formula. The human person equals self plus parts plus body. And he equates the self with the soul. We don't equate the self with the soul. The soul is different than the self, right? You know, we also are, you know, are thoughtful about how do we work in things like the passions? How do we work in the question of concupiscence? You know, how do we work in the question of evil, right? Work in the question of sin, right?
Think in Schwartz's world there is sin.
There really isn't, except for the unattached burdens or the critters, right? These are the, because there are some remarkable things about IFS, like the fact is that it's open to spiritual realities. Schwartz discovered demons, right? He was an agnostic, but he discovered demons and he talked about them as critters or unattached burdens. It's not in his main books because he doesn't want to get like woo-woo in his main books. But if you look at some of Robert Falconer's work, along with Richard Schwartz, you'll see that they're encountering spiritual forces that they write about. And, you know, so they don't understand them exactly the same way we do, but it's clearly identifiable that, yeah, that's a demon. So they recognize the reality of evil, but they don't understand. There's not a personal idea of sin. In fact, Schwartz really hates the concept of original sin. He actually really rails against that. But there are ways that we can use the good findings that he has, and rescue them. And we don't have to say, no, we're not going to go there.
Okay.
Because it's new agey or whatever. I do have a lot of concerns about like some approaches that say, well, if I can't find it in the early church fathers or in the Summa, I'm not gonna engage. And I'm like, well, I think there's a lot of good that God has allowed to happen. I don't reject the concept of DNA because Watson and Crick, who discovered it in the 50s, were both demonstrated a lot of anti-Catholic bigotry. They were both actually very harsh about Catholicism, very critical of Catholicism. Well, I'm going to still draw from the good that our Lord allowed them to discover. And for whatever reason, in his divine plan, he wanted those two guys to discover DNA, you know? And so I want to be conformed to that. So, but we are really, the last thing that I want to do is lead any of the members of the RCC astray. And I do pray about that. I do take that really seriously because I'm going to be responsible on my day of particular judgment for everything that I teach, everything that I say, you know, and also for the things that are said by the other staff members of the RCC as well. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Diane, because I think that's something that people really need to hear and for that to be said strongly. So,
well, I think when you start to learn about IFS, then you start looking for resources, or I did, and then you're going like, oh my gosh, this guy is just so... he's so open. I think things are falling out, you know, yeah. Like anything is of value. And it's just like, okay, that's not going to work. So then I found you.
That's the last thing that I would say would be a good way to evaluate is just go start typing that into YouTube. Cause you'll see people with IFS and they're realigning chakras or, you know, whoever, you know, whatever. And that's not, that does, you don't have to do it that way. It doesn't have to be so entangled in all of that. There are ways, if you go back to his original work in the 90s, in 1995, when the first book came out, you don't see any hints of any of that stuff
anymore. Oh, okay.
So some of that is, he's had sort of a way of expanding this as a way to bring peace and joy and love to the world and integration to the world. So there's almost like this, well, this really is an evangelization, but it's all in the natural realm. And again, that wouldn't be consistent with how we would understand what's actually going to save the world from a Catholic, you know, from our Catholic faiths.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any final things before we end for tonight? Any other last questions that came up for folks before we wrap it? Well, I really want to thank you for being here and for asking the questions. It makes it such a richer experience than me sort of, you know, going on for an hour. So I'm really glad that we were able to connect and look forward to any more questions you might have. So
thank you so much.
Yeah. Feel free to reach out. God bless. It's good to be
with you. You too. Thank you.
Thank you.